Okay, we're almost halfway done. Theme number 7. Related to invention and discovery, that theme we just talked about, is the theme of America as constantly new. And this is related to immigration, but it's also about fads and disruption and planned obsolescence and our obsession with youth. This theme can be seen in capitalism's insatiable, voracious need to sell the new. New products come and go in a matter of months. This requires a constant shifting of the playground. Or as in the book No Respect, Intellectuals and Pop Culture, writer Andrew Ross insists that it's a constant reshuffling of the cards. Constantly changing the rules. Think of all the websites like Facebook, constantly moving their buttons around. Or each new app that you're asked to install just to use a product or service. There's a concept called replacing the scenery. Americans usually readily accept this idea, this myth of consumer choice. But if you go and try to purchase a new kitchen appliance and try to pick out colors, you can see what lack of real choice you actually have. If you follow skincare fads, you can also see the manipulation from one on-trend ingredient to another. One year it's avocado, another year it's coconut oil, and then it's Dead Sea salt, and then one day it will be magic. The challenge to authority, that theme we talked about before, demands newness as well, because this is our rationale for the challenge itself. We want to do things in a new way. Saint Jean de Crèvecoeur once said in 1782, quote, "The American man is a new man with new ideas and new opinions." And that reminds us how oppressive the demand for the new is and how we often distrust that too. Think of the nouveau riche, as in the novel The Great Gatsby. America is in a constant state of becoming, some believe, maybe more so than in other countries, always trying to be new and young. Okay, theme number 8. This one is called Multitudes, Grandness, and Tangled Threads. Think Walt Whitman poems here. Even in a small town, there are multitudes. The Spoon River Anthology by Edgar Lee Masters is an example of this. In northeastern New Mexico, it might be a multitude of cactus or tumbleweeds. In a city, it might be multitudes in the DMV line. There is also a kind of information multitude. And with multitudes, there are always insiders and outsiders. This is Richard Gray again. Alienation and belonging. And it's not necessarily class-based. Are you in or out of a certain circle or group? And there's this idea of intentionally turning away from a group or the largest group, the masses, and then sometimes going back or returning to that group. Your time in the woods, strategic retreats, like for politicians or artists. The idea of separation and return. Also the idea of recovery. You go away to recover. The wilderness versus society. American frontier stories are full of this kind of wilderness idea. There's an Emerson Howe novel called Heart's Desire, which is about New Mexico and a town here called White Oaks. And it's about people coming to White Oaks to try to escape civilization. And this was during industrialization and all of its problems. But the characters find out that there are also problems in the wilderness too. And over time, the characters start longing again for civilization. There are terrors of the woods versus the safe clearing. Think of The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. This is an example of that. And some Robert Frost poems. This was a big Puritan trope, the evil woods. But we also have the pastoral poem of escape, the woods as rejuvenating and nurturing. Richard Gray also talks about the national versus the regional, and that each of these groups have unique qualities, ideas, impulses, vocabularies, symbols, and images. But the tangled threads of multitudes cause struggle within the community. Multicultural America is a rapidly changing patchwork, says Richard Gray. And whether you like it or you do not like it, that's the reality of it. and this includes religious pluralism. An example, in early Pennsylvania, German religions like the Amish, the Mennonites, the Moravians, and many others, versus the persecution in Massachusetts, the history of slavery, multicultural mining camps, and ranching settlements in the West were full of Europeans and Eastern Europeans, and you just have to look at the tombstones in a town like Dawson, New Mexico, and you can see this clearly. Immigration all throughout the 1900s and around the world wars. Intertextuality and genre mixing in American literature, this is more tangled threads. The tradition of the mashup in poetry and in music, because the tangle can be transformative. Theme number 9. This theme is called the cult of the personal. The first concept is self-creation or self-invention. Neil Gabler talks about this in his book, Life the Movie. Americans, he says, feel entitled to be whatever they want to be. To me, the problem is everybody wants to be the same person, the same famous person. In any case, Neil Gabler says that we assemble ourselves through our material things, or, quote, the stuff we've accumulated to form ourselves, or our idea of ourselves anyway. This, unfortunately, can become self-obsession, and we see this by the very profitable self-help industry and all its books and gurus, how we are constantly yearning for reinvention, which maybe feels like a perpetual rebirth in youth. Neil Gabler also talks about our declarative performance of our American selves. He says, quote, Americans are more theatrical in life. And he says maybe this has to do with our frontier spirit. Maybe our national lack of restraint, he says, our sense of display. Writer Alexis de Tocqueville, I hope I pronounced that correctly, back in the 1830s, warned that Americans could be driven back into themselves alone, that they see themselves in isolation, and that their fate is in their own hands. And he warned there is a danger the American may shut himself up in the solitude of his own heart. He said this back in the 1830s. He believes too much in self-reliance, which leads to solipsism, which is the belief that only you exist. So, egomaniacs. Richard Gray says there is an American tendency to see yourself as a representation of the whole culture. This is back to the idea that we should speak for everybody and be an every man. Everyone wants to be the representative American and write the great American novel, to be a, quote, complete statement of a person, like Walt Whitman, the good gray poet. The question here is, can you see your own biases? Can you see your own blind spots? Richard Gray puts it in other terms when he says, Americans like to ask, who am I? And to speak up for yourself, to articulate yourself is a social imperative. To say things like, I'm a meat and potatoes man, or I'm a Christian, insistence on pronouns, self-emancipation narratives, these are all part of that. We are currently experiencing an epidemic of narcissism, and this has been tracked going back to the 1970s with the me generation, and every product suggestion that you should, quote, have it your way, which I think that was a Burger King slogan. But our belief that we're entitled to customization, self-aggrandizement, quote, this isn't about you. If you've ever heard that spoken about yourself or anyone else, you are part of this epidemic. But this is a problem for poets, because the sanctity of the self is the core of any poem, and not just a lyric poem. I mean any poem that deals or denies a self. Like Richard Gray says, the self is the vital center of a poem, the source of our creative energy and spiritual undertow. So that's a tricky situation for poets.